That brings us to the third and final chapter of the unit, which means that we're getting close to another test. Which should be what, a week from today? Or no. A week from Monday, right, because we have two more lectures after this. Okay, so anyway, this third of the unit's chapters is called From Gene to Protein, because it's mostly about how DNA information gets used indirectly to make a protein. We're going through the process of transcription and translation eventually. But first, we have another experiment to look at, the results of another famous experiment. So this is the point in biological history where we've already shown that DNA is the genetic material. And so a major question at that time is, what is a gene? What does a gene do? Well, this experiment was set up to test the so-called one gene, one enzyme hypothesis. So named because the assumption was that a gene is a set of instructions for how to build an enzyme. And let me just show you a little bit about how they designed the experiment. They used mold cells, and some of them they just left alone. Some of them they irradiated with ultraviolet radiation to intentionally cause mutations. Now, they couldn't control where the mutations were occurring in the DNA. They just blasted them with UV, causing random mutations. But they did this, keep in mind, to test the so-called one gene, one enzyme hypothesis. So you have, down on the bottom here, a biochemical pathway, which you're already familiar with, right? You have an original precursor molecule that gets turned into something else, ornithine, which gets turned into something else, citrulline, and then finally arginine. One step at a time, right? That's what makes it a pathway. And as we've already talked about, each individual step in a pathway is a chemical reaction catalyzed by its own enzyme, right? That's why they were using a pathway. The rationale here is that if you destroy a gene, the cell is not going to be able to make the corresponding enzyme, and therefore it won't be able to get through the entire pathway. It'll be able to get through it up to the point where it needs that enzyme, and it can't get past that point. So they used these mold cells and grew them, the wild type, which are the ones that didn't get any mutations, on what's called minimal medium, just enough to keep them alive, but it doesn't include any of the intermediates in the pathway. And they were able to go all the way through the pathway because all of their enzymes were intact. Some of the mutants, though, had defective one enzyme or another. So they could only get partly through the pathway. And if they then, like this one, is blocked at enzyme A because it doesn't, or blocked at the first step because it doesn't have enzyme A, since they destroyed gene A that corresponds to it. Well, if they then just gave it ornithine in addition to the minimal medium, it could do the rest of it because B and C still worked. It just got them around the problem, in other words, by giving them a product rather than forcing them to make it. So they demonstrated that genes do correspond to enzymes, but the hypothesis is still wrong for multiple reasons. It's not one gene, one enzyme, because while it's true that certain genes correspond to certain enzymes, it's not true that every gene codes for an enzyme. Enzymes, as you know, they're all proteins. Genes do correspond to proteins, but not all of those proteins are enzymes. So that's why one gene, one enzyme, strictly speaking, is incorrect. You following me on this with the terminology? So they modified it to be the one gene, one protein hypothesis, which is a little bit closer to the truth, but that's still wrong. And there's multiple reasons why that's wrong, actually. One reason is that not all proteins are coded for by just one gene. Think back to what it means to be a multimeric protein. What does that mean? What is a multimeric protein? You're not allowed to forget this stuff after you've been tested on it. A multimeric protein is one that has quaternary structure. What does that mean? The four part of the word just means it's the fourth level of protein structure. Primary, secondary, tertiary, quaternary. But what is true of every protein that has quaternary structure? Not multiple proteins, multiple polypeptides. Right. Okay, now, some multimeric proteins, like collagen, for instance, are made of multiple polypeptides, but they're copies of each other. That's only one type of polypeptide, just more than one of them. That would still be coded for by a single gene. But consider hemoglobin that we looked at a little bit earlier. One hemoglobin is made up of four polypeptides, but it's two of one type and two of another type. So it actually requires two different genes to code for one hemoglobin, because you need a gene for one polypeptide type and a gene for another polypeptide type. So that alone is one reason why the phrase one gene, one protein is not true in all cases. Another reason why it's not true is that not every gene even has anything to do with a protein. There are so-called protein-coding genes, which is the vast majority of the genes. Protein-coding genes do indirectly code for proteins, or more specifically for polypeptides. All right, those are the protein-coding genes. But it's only indirect. What every gene directly codes for is an RNA molecule. Right? When a gene gets transcribed in the process of transcription, which we'll study, what gets created directly in that process is an RNA molecule. If it's a protein coding gene, then the RNA that gets produced in transcription is specifically messenger RNA, which then goes on into the translation process to produce a polypeptide. Well, there are all kinds of other genes besides these protein coding genes, though, collectively called non-protein coding genes. They still, like all genes, code for RNA, but they code for the other kinds of RNA besides messenger RNA. We haven't talked about other kinds yet, but we will in this chapter. There's all kinds of different RNA versions. mRNA is just one. That's produced by protein coding genes. Any kind of RNA, whether it's mRNA or any of the other kinds, doesn't just pop into existence. The cell has to be told how to build any kind of RNA. So the non-protein coding genes are there to tell the cell how to build the other kinds of RNA besides messenger RNA. And those don't go on into translation to build proteins. That's why the genes are called non-protein coding genes. So anyway, this is another reason why the phrase one gene, one protein is incorrect. Well, they refined it yet again to be one gene, one polypeptide, and that's still incorrect. Closer to the truth, but that's still incorrect for what I just told you. Not all genes are even involved with polypeptides, right? The non-protein coding genes don't code for anything that leads to even a polypeptide. They eventually stopped trying to refine the hypothesis name, but what's true for protein coding genes is that a gene does correspond to a polypeptide, but for reasons that we'll see later, a single gene can even code for multiple polypeptides in eukaryotes. I'm not going to tell you why yet, because we haven't gotten there, but I will eventually. Anyway, this is a well-designed experiment to demonstrate that there is genes definitely are involved in the creation of enzymes. It's just that enzymes are only one of the possible products. All right, well, I'll stop there for today. We'll go on to continue with two next time.